it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The culture is the culture. It's 4 to 6, 8.
You know they have a Filet-O-Fish breakfast sandwich now?
But the plan to win has never changed. So...
slam one of those on a muffin. Okay. Does that mean we're rolling? Okay. All right. I'll spare you the shit. Did anyone see Tony Hero?
Welcome back to 4 to 6 with A&B, your Ohio State podcast brought to you by The Athletic. This is Bill Landis, joined as I always am by Ari Wasserman. But on today's episode, we have a very special guest, someone who dusted both of us in our NCAA and tournament pick'em, which finished way back in April, and he's reaping the rewards of it now in July. His name is Marshall Stewart. He won our bracket pool, actually won it on a tiebreaker with the final score, which I don't think I've seen happen too often. There were actually two people who finished with the same point total as you, Marshall, but you won by getting the correct final score. And I got to be honest, I don't even remember who won the national championship of college basketball last year. It's been that long since this has happened.
Wait, but you nailed the actual score?
He came pretty close.
He was closest.
I think. Yeah, I'd forgot that the tiebreaker came into play. Honestly, wasn't it Kansas?
I believe yes, it was. Kansas beat North Carolina, right? Yes.
Yes.
And I remember that I won a big bet because of the guy who dribbled the ball off of his foot. Remember? There's some crazy ending that, like, I was like, oh my god, everybody who bet Kansas lost, and then something crazy happened, and they won. Yes.
All I remember is that I won a lot of money on St. Peter's.
Good job, Bill.
That's the extent of my. I finished almost dead last in our 4-6 with A&B bracket pool.
Because you probably had Ohio State in the Elite Eight.
I think I might have, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Close to the situation is what they call it.
That's probably right. But Marshall won. So his reward is that he gets to come on to the podcast with the two of us and you know, as promised, kind of make this his show. So we'll delve into some topics that Marshall wanted to get into. But before we do that, Marshall, I'm curious, maybe tell us a little bit about kind of your Ohio State fandom, how long you've been a Buckeye fan, maybe how much of a diehard Ohio State fan you are, and I guess why you wanted to enter a bracket pool where you knew this would be the end result if you ended up winning.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic in a way, because college basketball is now a sport, is one of the lesser sports that I really even follow or watch. I've kind of gotten much more into you know, hockey and even, you know, English Premier League and some other things in the winter, through the winter. And so, you know, like a lot of people, I get interested in March and was lucky enough to win this. But, yeah, so I've lived in Ohio my whole life. My parents were actually from out west, but had ended up in Ohio. My dad was a teacher at Ohio Northern University, which is a small school about 75 miles northwest of Columbus, you may have heard of. But we spent part of my time growing up, we did live in Columbus, and my the church that my family attended would run the concession stands at Ohio Stadium as kind of a fundraiser.
Cool.
So I would just tag along with my dad, you know, and this is, I'm probably, you know, 6-7 years old, and, you know, just work in the concession stand. And then back then you could just sort of go find an aisle or something to go watch the games. And then, you know, make your way back at halftime to work the stand and so forth. So this was, this was the early to mid, early 70s. This was the Woody Hayes era. Archie Griffin was at Ohio State, just to give you an idea. And, you know, it was kind of that golden era of, you know, Ohio State, Michigan rivalry. I think it's sometimes called the 10-year war, Woody and Bo and all that. And, you know, I remember even, you know, driving home from church, I think one Sunday with in the back of the family car, when it was announced that Ohio State was chosen to go to the Rose Bowl. I don't recall all the specifics, but somehow or another, they had ended up as a tie in a tie with Michigan. And it was a huge, you know, huge controversy, as you can imagine. But for reasons I don't recall, Ohio State was chosen to go to the Rose Bowl. And
I think it was a coin flip, wasn't it? It's like some crazy tiebreaker that didn't Bo Schembechler had like a meltdown because of it.
Yeah, that part I think is Bo having the meltdown for sure. But, you know, and in those times, it was, you know, such a different time, obviously technology and everything. But, you know, today, as we see what's happening to college football, and it's so dominated by television, and you know, all the conference realignment and everything is really driven by TV dollars. You know, in those days, you know, Ohio State, the Big Ten had a rule that you could only be on television once a year, or at least one conference game. So, you know, there weren't any cable channels. And so, like, literally fall in Ohio was you know, listening to Ohio State on the radio. And then, you know, maybe attending the local small college football game in person. And then Saturday night, they would replay the games on PBS. And so you would stay up and watch the replay on PBS. And then, you know, you would really look forward to that Michigan game because you got to watch it live. And, you know, more often than not, that determined who went to the Rose Bowl. It was always, as they used to call it, the Big Two Little Eight, because no one outside of Ohio State and Michigan was particularly good back then. You know, obviously, it was before the expansion of the conference. So anyway, it was just, you know, just kind of growing up in that period. We moved back up to closer to the Lima area where my dad was teaching, but, you know, still very big time Buckeye country. And then I ended up back in Columbus after college. So was there through kind of the end of the Earl Bruce era, John Cooper. And then I moved to Cincinnati in the early 90s, and I've been here ever since, but always retained that Ohio State fandom. It's just something when you spend your youth in Central Ohio, it's just kind of there for forever. You know, you know, it's just now with the technology and everything, I used to be the type of sports fan that would go and find, you know, every newspaper I could buy. Like, cause you know, in Central Ohio, the Dispatch was, you know, the Dispatch had really good Ohio State coverage, but not so much other things necessarily, but you could go buy the Plain Dealer and you could buy the Cincinnati Inquirer and so forth and get your, you know, so you, you know, and of course USA Today came along and, you know, now it's all in the digital age. There's just so much more to consume, and podcasts are a big part of that. So you ask, why would I want to, you know, join this contest? It's, you know, I've been fans of you guys for a number of years now, pretty much the whole time you've been podcasting. I think you guys were doing some even before The Athletic, if I recall correctly, right? I mean, you were.
Yeah, we created Buckeye Talk.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that right?
That's right, Doug. And I'm in the Buckeye Lingers Talk podcast, follows 7 people on Twitter, and I'm not one of them, and I resent it.
because
it's born because of our seed.
Good to know.
Do you listen to Buckeye Talk?
I do some. It's, you know, there's just more. There's more there than I have time to consume. I enjoy Buckeye Talk, yeah. But it's just, you know, it's like almost every day, and it's over an hour, and it's just like, I don't know. You guys, your podcast to me is like just the right amount. It's like enough,
yeah, it's better
for a serious Buckeye fan to get what they need, but it's not this kind of Buckeye Talk is kind of an overwhelming amount, honestly, for me. So I listen to you guys. I listen to the Bucknuts Morning 5 pretty regularly because that's, you know, that's a good kind of daily brief thing. I've been a Bucknuts reader for a long, long time. And, you know, that was one of the first digital things that I really got into. I started as a journalism major, interestingly enough, with the intention of becoming a sports writer, and kind of covered Ohio Northern sports back in the day for a little campus newspaper, and even did some broadcasting on the campus radio station, switched to finance.
I think you made the right choice. Right choice.
So job's not nearly as much fun. I'd say that. I mean, I know you guys, there's aspects of your job that are not so much fun, and you know, working late in the evenings, getting stories out and all that kind of stuff. But so anyway, yeah. So I kind of have a little bit different. I feel like I have a little bit different perspective on you guys, what you do. And so I had a brief taste of doing it back in the day. But so yeah, just, you know, and I've always been really into the recruiting side, which is another reason I really, you know, enjoy you guys' work, and Ari in particular with that side that, and, you know, Bill, you're really attuned to it as well. But, you know, back in the, again, you know, old fart takes, you know, there would be articles in the newspaper here and there if they would get a commit. But in terms of who they were pursuing and that kind of thing, it was like, you know, unless you just happen to live near that particular player or something. So that, you know, and there used to be, I don't even remember the guy's name. There was a guy that would do a recruiting report that would come out after commitment date, you know, and they would just print it. And it was like a little, like pamphlet type of thing. And you could,
Tom Lemming.
Oh, this was before Tom Lemming, I think.
Oh,
even well before that. But
yeah, I think Tom Lemming was the guy that was like charging people $68 a minute. Was that the?
Yeah.
Oh, he had the hotline. Like
a
hotline. Right?
Yeah, dude, there's a visionary, man. That guy was the original.
Well, I think he was in the more of the kind of the onset of the digital, or not the digital, but the cable age, if you will. You know, because ESPN.
Yeah, he invented the star system, I think. Or like he was like one of the first people to start calling it stars.
Yeah, that sounds right. But whoever this guy was, he would send out this little report, and you'd get this and read about the various recruits and who they were, and that's kind of how you did it. But it's, so again, just another thing that's just kind of interesting. Now you see, just now it's just, I mean, there's just any number of sources of information to get recruiting info. And it's a, you know, it's an industry kind of into itself, which, you know, like Bucknuts, I mean, you know, I think that's an example of one that, you know, Bucknuts would not have been what it was without the recruiting interest, you know?
Sure.
And I think they were like, you know, they were independent for a long time. I mean, there was a guy out of Dayton, Mr. Bucknuts, who I don't know if I ever did hear his name, his actual name, but that was out of Dayton.
He got his name legally changed to Mr. Bucknuts.
Did he?
No, I don't know. I don't know who it is either.
But I mean, so now they're part of, what is it, 24/7, but I think they, I know at least at one point they had a huge percentage of the actual readership. And
the Ohio State Van site stuff is very interesting because I feel like it like changes so rapidly. Like it's every 3 years, there's a new one. And then there's a lot of like, it's like sports where they're like, this guy got traded to this publication. And there's a lot. I think the point is that I'm trying to make is that there's a lot of places Ohio State fans are lucky to have a plethora of options to consume their favorite sport. And we're glad that you've spent at least some of your time consuming us. It means the world to me. And Bill, before we move on to the next thing though, Doug, I was just joking.
I don't think
don't
he listens.
Don't go on a rampage.
I don't know if he does or not,
but if you do, I love you, buddy. It was just a joke.
I think we're good there.
Wasn't there some upheaval here recently on Buckeye Scoop? Was it, or which one there was? I don't really follow that one, but I saw some Twitter comments that a couple people were leaving there and it seemed like it was causing some,
seems I'll just say it seems a little messy and maybe leave it at that.
We don't have the look into the curtain, but I think something's happening behind the curtain.
Someone had a falling out, it appears. So
that certainly appears to be the case. Marshall, before we get into some of the topics you want to discuss, I'm just curious, you told us about being in the shoe back in the 70s when you were a kid. Were you there in 72 when Archie made his debut against North Carolina, or that would have been before going?
Possibly. I don't recall, you know, specific games, but quite possibly. Okay. Trying to think. We moved from Columbus back to Ada, is actually the name of the town, in about 74. So I think we were in Columbus at that time, because I think we had moved back for the last couple of years of Archie's era when he won the back-to-back Heismans and so forth. Mm-hmm. So I may have been, but I don't know.
I was just, yeah. Okay. I was just curious if you had any vivid memories of that, but it's okay. It's okay that you don't, because I don't remember what happened like a week ago. So I don't remember.
That
far back.
Yeah. Gosh. I mean, I think my earliest memories are probably like, you know, other than just, I remember being at the stadium. I don't really remember any aspects. I don't know how much I understood about football at the time. You know, maybe some of those games when they went to the Rose Bowl and probably my earliest memories, but you know, that was TV, of course, but, you know, them watching them against, you know, Charles Davis or some glory era USC running back, you know, one of those guys, but, no, I don't, nothing that specific.
So, one of the things you mentioned before we started recording that you wanted to talk about was just you know, the general state of college football. There's obviously a lot changing. You made the point that even so much has changed the first time you and I connected, which is back in April, maybe, or early May, after you actually had won the bracket pool. Ari and I discussed conference realignment when it happened two or three episodes ago, when it was announced that USC and UCLA were joining the Big Ten in 2024. And we talked about kind of some of the regionality just sort of being sucked out of the sport. And obviously the landscape is changing very much. And I think he and I both sort of wondered aloud what that might mean for fans, but we have one on the podcast now. So I think it'd be maybe be remiss not to ask if you hear some of this stuff about how it's changing and just looks very different from how it looked, you know, even 5 years ago. Does it alter at all how you view the sport, how you consume the sport, how you enjoy the sport?
Well, I don't think it'll alter how I consume the sport, because I think it's just, you know, it's just part of my life and I'm going to consume it. You know, Saturdays in the fall and early winter, I'm going to watch college football. You know, I guess I am a bit of a, I don't know. I don't, I'm sometimes on some things, I guess I'm a purist. I'm generally more progressive about, you know, stuff, times change, things are going to change, whatever makes the game better. I don't really see this making the game better. I see it concentrating power in a way that's probably not particularly healthy. And I do, I don't like the fact that, you know, like some of the West Coast rivalries are going to be impacted, obviously. I liked, you know, I think there's been expansion. I think there was a certain amount of expansion was natural. Nebraska, Penn State, natural expansion. Maryland, Rutgers, not so much, but not all that impactful, I guess, at the end of the day. But when you start bringing in two Los Angeles schools into the Big Ten, no geographic, you know, proximity and no real historical, like, you know, like Ohio State and Penn State had history before, you know, a little bit. And so, yeah, I don't, that's the part I don't like. I think the other thing one thing I didn't mention that I think also gives me some additional perspective is as a resident of Cincinnati, I became pretty much all my friends in Cincinnati were UC grads. And now my wife and both my daughters are either UC alum or students. And so last year I've been, you know, following the football program pretty much the whole time I've lived here for the last almost 30 years. But, you know, last year in particular, kind of knew it was going to be a special year. And I went to every home game and one road game and the playoff game for UC. So it was quite a football year in the city of Cincinnati, obviously. But I bring that up just to say that, you know, we've had there's been an ongoing string of texts with myself and my friends who are UC fans. And they're just, you know, of course, everybody's really focused on this issue. And what does this mean to the Big 12? And you know, and obviously the Big 12 is, you know, that's already been impacted with the SEC taking Texas and Oklahoma. So it's just especially interesting, I think, from someone like myself, who's lifelong Ohio State fan, longtime UC fan. And just, you know, because one conference has already been impacted, probably going to be more there. They seem like they're pausing for now. But then, you know, there's clearly stuff going on between the Pac-12 and the Big 12 behind the scenes. And I think, you know, trying to see who's going to have chairs when the music stops, you know, and so more to follow. But at the end of the day, I think the games on television, I think, will be just as good. The rivalries will be there will be different rivalries, I guess. The traditional rivalries, I think, will be a casualty of it to at least some degree. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to watch any less college football or read any less or listen to any less podcasts or any of that. So
that's good to hear.
I don't think it's going to hurt viewership or readership or interest or, you know, I mean, I think there might be a certain subsegment that's going to be like, you know, like if you're now, you know, especially like take the South, for example. I mean, you guys know that you know, as fervent as football fans are in the Midwest, I think in the South, it's even to another level. You know, an Alabama fan's not going to be any less interested in Alabama because they're playing Oklahoma or Texas instead of Auburn or in addition to Auburn, you know. So regionally, I think, you know, and I think I think in the Northeast and some of those areas, there's probably been a little bit of an uptick in interest because schools like that. So I hope it doesn't go too crazy. I do think there's a point of diminishing returns on conference size. You know, I like my midweek action as much as the next guy. And, you know, I want to see them still thrive. I mean, it's interesting. Like, you know, UC Miami, one of the oldest rivalries in college football. I mean, you know, they're going back to maybe pre-1900, but, you know, but, you know, obviously you've seen the divergence of those programs, you know, because it wasn't that long ago that Miami was at least on equal footing with UC. That was pre Big East days, but, you know, and having Ben Roethlisberger and kind of that. But anyway, it's, any reaction to any of that you guys have that beyond what you've already talked about?
No, I was just mostly curious about consumption. Like if I guess from the Ohio State standpoint, not much is changing, which is what Ari and I have talked about quite a bit. It doesn't feel like Ohio State's world is getting rocked all that much by this. I think if you were a fan of a team out west, as you mentioned, I think maybe it alters things quite drastically. But from the Ohio State standpoint, I think life kind of continues on as mostly normal. You get more couple trips to LA every year. I actually think it's kind of cool that Ohio State and USC will play more regularly because there's some history there that I think is, you know, it's, I think Ohio State and USC probably have more history than Ohio State has with, you know, the majority of the Big Ten, frankly. So I actually,
and it's good for Ohio State fans if you replace the Illinois game with the USC game,
right?
Like in the years where that happens. Now, the thing that I really don't know exactly how it's going to go is, you know, what it means for, you know, travel and all that stuff, but I don't think that's a fan's concern. So, you know, the reason why all this happened, and it's something that we have to acknowledge, is that Ohio State is the reason this is happening. Like, if you're an Ohio State fan, it doesn't impact you because the reason why the teams want to expand and be in the Big Ten is because Ohio State exists in it. If Ohio State wasn't in the Big Ten, then the entire conference wouldn't be as marketable as it is.
Yep.
Like, they are the world that the entire sport revolves around. So, like, all these discussions about, you know, where's the sport headed or what's the next domino to fall? Well, the next domino that falls will fall in line to the way that Ohio State wants to fall. Like, that's the, like, that. So, like, if you're an Ohio State fan, like, you're in a good spot. Yeah. So, my number one reaction to it is, like, how does this impact Ohio State? Ohio State's the man who knocks, right? Like, that's like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, they're the viewership juggernaut. They're the team with the most fans, alumni base. You know, I think statistically they have more alumni and fans than any other team in the country. They're the ones that draws all the attention. So all the stuff that is happening, I think, is a testament to what Ohio State is. So,
yeah, and just,
you know, I feel bad for other fans of programs that are going to be left behind. And that, I think, is going to be an interesting thing. And when and if they make an expanded playoff, or, you know, what access they will have to the teams that aren't in the super conferences that seem inevitable right now, will certainly be something worth tracking. But as it pertains to Ohio State, they're driving through the rain without getting hit by the drops. And I think that's going to be a constant throughout their existence of their program.
Yeah, because it's not just the alumni base. There's pretty much anybody who grew up in Ohio is an Ohio State fan. And even if they've migrated elsewhere, they're still watching. What do you guys think about the notion that if the Pac-12 had agreed to the expanded playoff, that this would not have happened. Forgive me if you guys already discussed this, but I've seen that opinion voiced pretty frequently.
Yeah, I don't think we've discussed that. I think maybe it wouldn't have happened now. I still think eventually we would get to a place where super conferences start to form, but I think maybe the powers that be would feel less pressure to get that rolling had some playoff expansion already been decided. But this did feel inevitable. I think that the thing that was most surprising in all this was just the timing of it. I'm not surprised that it happened. Yeah. I'm surprised when it happened. So I still think it would have happened. I don't know if Ari disagrees with that.
I just think that the television contracts and what is out there for potential income is just too great to ignore. I mean, you're Mr. Finance, right? Like, it's all about dollars and cents. So, you know, I do think that there is this longing for things not to change and for us to keep things the same way that they've always been. But I just don't think in a world that spins because of money, that's even possible, not just in college football, but just in any walk of life.
Yeah. I do wonder a little bit in terms of some of those, if there is a limit to where those dollars can go. I mean, it seems limitless in terms of the dollars that can come from these contracts. But at some point, you know, all the money that they pay to the schools has to be, you know, it still has to be profitable for the network, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's streaming or cable or some combination of the two. And so I do kind of wonder if there's a point at which when you talk about consumption, I don't think the interest wanes, and I think everybody will want to watch, but like if at some point, you know, you have to buy a different streaming service in order to watch Ohio State football.
Right.
Is there a tipping point there that, you know,
is there any place or any amount of money that they could stream Ohio State where you wouldn't pay it?
Yeah, it's,
let's just get even crazy with the Marshall. If they charged you $2,000 to watch all their games on TV, would you pay it?
Wow.
I think, yeah. I mean, and I'm just saying, like, I'm using $2,000 as an example of, like, that is an uncomfortable amount of money for a lot of people. And I think that anybody who is obsessed with Ohio State would get the money together unless they absolutely couldn't afford it. Like, I don't think there's any limit whatsoever. And $2,000 is an outrageous number. But if they charge you $100 a year or $200 a year or $300 a year to subscribe or download the Big Ten app to stream their games, I don't think that there's any limit of how far people will go to watch their team.
Yeah, I think it's going to drive other people to other means of watching, you know.
Yes.
You know, they're gonna go to the bar or they're gonna go to their friend's house and they're gonna somehow split the cost and, you know, like the old days of, or I guess today with Ultimate Fighting more so, but you know, back when we used to get together at someone's house and chip in $5 each to watch Mike Tyson you know, pummel somebody for 90 seconds. you know, that kind of thing. But you know, so yeah, that it is an interesting question. And, you know, and I work with people who are sports finance specialists, and a lot of that is all kind of driven by that revenue that kind of flows down, and they've seen the impact on regional sports networks is one area where there's been, you know, with the cord cutting and so forth, that there's been some I guess what's the term, disruption or whatever, that, you know, as technology changes and so forth, that, you know, because like, for example, for someone my age, who's old enough to remember the first time ESPN was available in your house, and then versus now, like, you know, like my kids don't have cable, and the younger people that I work with and so forth don't have cable. So they're talking about how they're, you know, trying to figure out how to stream whatever team they follow absent a cable subscription using their dad's subscription or whatever, and those kinds of things. So it is, I think you're already seeing that happening to a degree, because those people, like, you know, I'm talking about people that are, you know, late 20s, you know, early 30s, and they're like, they don't have this stuff. And so at some point, because like even ESPN, you can subscribe to ESPN Plus and get just an enormous amount of content, but without a cable or some kind of subscription, the stuff that's on the channel is blacked out, right? So it's not so simple yet. They're still forcing you to both channels. So it would be interesting, because I think, well, like, for example, just, you know, like, main reason I still have cables because Bally's is not on the alternatives. So I can't, if I want to watch the Reds, the Blue Jackets, et cetera, I can't, Spectrum is my only option. But Bally's is coming out with a straight to market streaming service, I think next year. And so there's already a question, okay, what's that going to cost? And how much is that worth to you? Would you pay $25 a month for Bally's streaming? And my answer is, well, sure, especially if I can save 50 or 100 cutting the cord, you know? So,
yeah.
Anyway, I think that's all probably going to be part of it at some point. There's going to be some shift in how people consume the sport, and then we will test the limits of that demand and the cost. So,
yeah, I think there's a potential for it to splinter in a way where you're going to have to kind of, you know, have access to maybe four or five different things to make sure you're not missing any of what you want to see when it comes to watching your team's games. Yeah. Want to pivot a little bit here, Marshall, because you said you kind of wanted to get into sort of the state of the Buckeyes, some thoughts or questions maybe you have on the team heading into the 2022 season, which is like 7 weeks away, which is kind of crazy. Hey,
before you ask us, Marshall, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you think Ohio State's reached their potential?
No. I think that they have reached it in certain years, clearly, but I think it with Ohio State, there have been, you know, there's been talent gaps and there's been coaching gaps. And in some years there was both, I guess if I say there's a talent gap, then maybe that was their potential in that given year. But I think the biggest thing is the coaching gaps. I mean, if you look back, you know, like Urban Meyer, for example, as he, you know, Urban's record was directly tied to how well he managed transition in his coaching staff.
Yep.
I think that's a fair statement. So,
yep.
So, you know, for example, when, the DC, the defensive coordinator that went to Boston College, for example, good example, you know, because
Halfley, yeah.
Halfley left and was, I think, was that replaced with,
he was replaced by Kerry Combs.
Kerry Combs.
2020 season. Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't recall if there was because I think Chris Ash was in there too at some point, but maybe I can't recall exactly the order of people, but
yeah, Ash was first.
Yeah.
So he was 14. But,
you know, even Ash, I think, you know, he had issues. He had major issues, in the defensive coaching. I think it was clear. Yeah. There were talent gaps, I think, to be clear, in certain years for sure. That just some recruiting shortfalls, but I think the coaching, there were years where, like, I mean, you know, God love him, Kerry Combs is a local legend in Cincinnati, and I'm really happy that he's at UC in a non-coordinator role. But you know, the 4-4 that had, you know, one of the slowest linebackers in America covering the Heisman Trophy winning wide receiver all the way across the field was just an abomination of defensive coaching. I think we can all agree. I mean, Alabama was a ridiculously talented team, and I'm not sure the best coaches. I'm not sure Bill Belichick coaching the Ohio State defense that year would have, you know, led to a win, but they had no chance with the way they approached that game from a defensive scheme standpoint, I think this was my viewpoint. So long-winded way of saying, I think in some of those years, I think the talent was better than the result on the field because of coaching. You know, before Ryan Day, for example, when I think it was when Tom Herman left and the offensive line coach got elevated offensive coordinator.
Yeah, Ed Warner.
Yep. Warner. I knew I was going to say Warman, but yeah, Ed Warner. That's an example to me of just, you know, just not suited for the job. And unfortunately, he's probably a fine offensive line coach. And, you know, hell, may still be the offensive line coach today if he hadn't, you know, gotten that promotion. But, you know, he just wasn't well suited for the job. And I think, you know, to some degree, I think even Urban kind of held him back in some of those latter years, because I don't think he let, he gave Ryan Day full control of the offense and let it, you know, I think he was still very tied to that, you know, kind of, you know, sort of single wing ish version of the run of the spread, you know, with JT Barrett as a, you know, his version of Tim Tebow. So, you know, I don't think they have, you know, last year, again, it was, you know, Kerry Combs still there. It was unfortunate. It's interesting. I really felt like where Day might have dropped the ball, and something to talk about things that kind of changed the course of history. You know, if Day had done what he should have done back then and hired Marcus Freeman as defensive coordinator, which I believe Marcus Freeman would have probably loved to have taken that job, then I think Ohio State's outcome would have been different. And, you know, he might not have ended up at Notre Dame on that staff and not be the head coach today. So worked out well for him, but I don't know. I think those have just been where it's been interesting to watch Ohio State over the years, where the coaching staff is just, you know, the wrong hires have really, really had an impact. I mean, I think even going back to Tressel when he had, what was his name, Jim Bowman, mm-hmm. who was the title of offensive coordinator and was also offensive line coach. And those, I used to refer to those days watching Ohio State as a 3-hour root canal. watching a Jim Tressel, Jim Bowman offense was only slightly less, you know, painful than visits to the dentist. So anyway,
So what's on your mind with this team then, Marshall, going into this year? Yeah. What are some of the things that are front of mind going into the season?
Well, I think, you know, on the offense, I mean, clearly the talent on the offensive skill positions is, you know, maybe as good as it's ever been. So my only concern and question is just kind of the state of the offensive line, which I think, you know, was a, you know, was,
you have the, you're asking the right person on that one.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, I think having guys at their natural position will be beneficial. I think they're going to have a good talented player playing their natural position at every position, which was not the case last year. They tried to get the best five guys on the field at the same time. And I think that the performance suffered because of it. I find it kind of mind blowing. You know, where I see Paris Johnson projected to be drafted, because, which is not to say that I don't think he's that talented, but he's taken so few snaps at the tackle position in college. It's kind of mind blowing to see him projected as a top 10 pick next year. But I understand that he was one of the top tackles in the country coming out. So that, from that standpoint, it makes sense. But so I think that my viewpoint is, if the offensive line plays just average, which is a theme that resonates in Cincinnati a lot, then the offense will be probably the best in the country. If it doesn't, then I think it could hold the offense back.
Yeah, I think that's probably the right way to view it. I'd say the same thing. There's a couple of things I wonder with the offensive line. Like the tackle play last year, I thought was very good until they played Michigan. And I know they lost the Oregon game anyway, but I would have liked to see those guys play against Kayvon Thibodeau as well, because there wasn't much in the way of opportunities against premier pass rushers. They did very well against George Karlaftis, but I thought they had a good plan in that game too. And he was kind of a one-man show. Like Notre Dame's got a great pass rush. They're going to play some good defenses this year. And Paris is new. And DeWand, I think, needs to shore some things up at right tackle. And I wonder a little bit about pass protection, but I think it's more about the run game. It's more about consistently kind of knocking teams back, which they didn't do well that last year. I think that's like a leverage thing, and goes back to your point about tackles playing guard when they should have had guards playing guard. So maybe those things get help this year. I think there's some technical stuff in the run game specifically that they need to get better at, that I think Justin Fry has like really been harping on since he got here. And I'm curious to see kind of the rewards of that. But I think, you know, we say it every year, and I think Ari's made the point too. Like I feel like we always come into the year thinking like, oh, this offensive line, man, if everything clicks, they can be best in the country. Like they never quite get there. And again, I feel that way because, you know, Parrish Johnson, number one tackle in his class, Donovan Jackson, number one tackle in his class. I think Luke Whippler is a pretty good center. I like what I saw from Matthew Jones last year. And I think DeJuan will continue to grow. It's like, man, if all those guys kind of come together at the right time, it's got the potential to be a really good offensive line. But, you know, we've thought that the last couple of years and it hasn't really hit that way. So I'm with you, Marshall. I think if the O-line just isn't a liability, I think everything else is there. I don't know. I know Ari's more into the skill and the flash and all that stuff, but I don't know. I
certainly respect the importance of the offensive line for sure. And I look at the depth chart every single year and I say, well, I mean, the fact that last year's offensive line wasn't very good, as it turns out, is the most shocking thing. Like the talent is always there. And then my number one gripe, sorry, I'm coming up off of a cold. My number one gripe with Ohio State's always been that the talent is there, but it doesn't seem to get maxed.
Yeah.
And you look at all the teams that they are compared against to regularly, and it's like Nick Saban has all this similar talent and he maxes it every single year. And I think that some of the best Ohio State teams in the history of the program are the teams that came up short. And I don't know what needs to happen or if it's even possible to match that Nick Saban is just above us all. But the amount of times Ohio State has fallen short in years where they had the pieces to win it all is staggering to me. And things like the offensive line not playing very well last year are the things that irk me about covering this team.
I talk about managing the coaching staff and the pitfalls that we've seen for Ohio State. I mean, if, you know, Saban, you know, that may be the single thing that is most amazing about Saban is that, like, it doesn't seem to matter who he loses from his staff. It just go and he'll replace them and the beat goes on. And maybe there'd been some drop off here and there, but it's still just, you know, gets these teams to perform at such a high level through all that coaching staff turnover is, I don't know, to me is kind of like he obviously recruits fantastic classes year in and year out and so on and so forth, but, and he's got just the culture of winning and so forth. But to me, that's the thing that's just been kind of a wonder to behold. Is like, oh, well, yeah, that'd be a drop off this year. Offensive coordinator just left. And no,
you know, when we all ascend to heaven and we get to ask God three questions, I might ask one of them as, what did Nick Saban do? Because it is probably the reason why I've been unfairly harsh about Ohio State, because I look at a team that on paper is similarly built, but constantly gets everything out of it. And it's not like Ohio State's had bad head coaches. I mean, Urban Meyer is one of the greatest college coaches of all time. And he won one national title in 7 years, and one national title in 7 years for most programs would be like, hell yeah. But like, when you look at the teams that they had during that 7 year run, it's like, holy crap, what happened? You know, the fact that we're going on a decade without a national championship is insane to me. And maybe it's kind of like when the Cavs were really, really good and LeBron and Kyrie were together. It's like they happened to run into the Golden State Warriors in their prime. And it's just like, well, sometimes you have to live with that. Maybe this era of Ohio State football is just running into Alabama in its prime. But the truth of the matter is that Ohio State has failed to reach that stage more times than not anyway.
Well,
before they ever even had to face them.
I think if you just look at the individual games, you know, go back to those seasons where they didn't get to the finals even, you know, and they're losing to a Michigan State in the conference championship game, for example. You know, talk about under, you know, failure to meet potential. I think, you know, those kind of games, and then just getting, you know, losing whatever it was by 30 points nearly to Clemson in the semifinals. You know, those kind of games, I think clearly you have to, yeah. Urban Meyer is such an interesting case study, because even taking away the more recent events, which are, you know,
Terrifying.
Puzzling and weird and
weird is a good word.
Weird, odd.
Even before that, I feel like there's something that in Saban's makeup that Urban Meyer lacks, you know, like he, you know, Saban just has this ability to just, you know, he's obviously intense and emotional at times and those kinds of things, but he's able to channel it in a way that gets results at such a high, you know, frequency. Whereas I think Meyer, some of that, he just, you know, whether it was the health issues, which I think are real. And I mean, gosh, you know, watching him on the sideline those years was just painful, you know.
They're going to win the national title again this year. I got news for you.
Alabama.
You see them in the blue chip ratio?
I mean, the blue chip ratio looks the same every year.
No, it doesn't. It's getting more lopsided than it's ever been before.
Isn't Ohio State like 1 percentage point behind them?
No, they're like 8 percentage points behind them. I think Alabama's like
89 to 80.
That's huge. And on top of that, they have Bryce Young and Will Anderson. Like, tell me they're not going to win the national title this year. The second I saw that, I was like, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I would pick them. I think I think Ohio State is in that conversation for a lot of people. I think like a lot of these magazines, Ohio State's number two.
Well, because they're number two in the blue chip ratio.
Yeah, well, it's because they have Ohio State's also in a strange position where they have a lot coming back. Like they have a lot coming back from a team that had some real deficiencies, but it's not common that Ohio State has so much production coming back. So I think people see that and want to put them up there as well. But yeah, I don't.
Well, they belong then too. Like I don't know.
No, for sure. But I'm saying like I think any, you know, rational sort of unbiased person would look at the two teams. It's like, yeah, I think Alabama's got more than them right now.
And like if it connects for Ohio State, and let's just say the secondary is awesome, the offensive line plays balls to the wall, and they're an awesome football team, at the end of the road, they might still lose to Alabama.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that sucks for Ohio State.
What do you think the spread would be if Ohio State played Alabama week one on a neutral field? And I mean a real neutral field, not
10,
not Atlanta. 10,
maybe, you know? Maybe seven.
Yeah. At least
I think it would be a touchdown.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. And I think, you know, I think all things being equal, I'm sure. Now, granted, and I think Ohio State, you know, I don't know what's the spread on the Notre Dame game? It's double digits.
14.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not concerned about that game. I do think, you know, given, you know, the turnover on the coaching staff, I think, you know, the defense is, you know, there's clearly a lot of work to be done there. And, you know, I think they're going to have better talent. I think they're going to utilize it better. The thing I love about Ryan Day is he's just not going to wait around for some of these coaches to get better. You know, he realized that he didn't have the right people in place at coordinator and offensive line coach, and he went out and fixed it. I think as an Ohio State fan, I love that. And
it took a year.
Yeah. And so
losing season after getting embarrassed in the national title game to fix it. But yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I think it took long, actually, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, arguably, like I said, I think with Kerry Combs, it was, you know, you could certainly make the argument that he should have pulled the plug, you know, sooner on Combs.
Yeah, it's the benefit of hindsight.
But I guess at least I say, you know, that you know, I think for this year at least, he's made the changes that were necessary, and I think that you know, I think there might be more room for Ohio State to improve throughout the year than Alabama. So by the end of the year, not that Alabama won't get better, because they all do, and he'll, you know, I think Ohio State might have maybe a few more pieces, and I haven't studied the rosters, but just thinking about the draft and who they lost, and, you know, thinking about the receiver position in particular comes to mind, and maybe some offensive linemen. I think maybe Ohio State has a little bit better. I don't know. I'm not saying they got a better overall roster or anything, but I'm just saying maybe at key positions, they might have a few more experienced people.
That would be a fun podcast if we like took a week and really dived into both teams' rosters in depth. Yeah. Like if you did a position by position breakdown, because I think there's only one that off the top of my head, I would take Ohio State over.
Receiver.
And that'd be receiver. Yeah. I mean, not anybody who would would laugh at that as an idiot. But I don't know, like, even at quarterback. I mean, I guess you can make a case for Stroud, but they're probably second at quarterbacks.
Splitting hairs,
you know, because we'd be talking about it from a college football aspect, not who's a better pro prospect. You know, and linebacker, I think that's an open and shut case just by thinking about it. Offensive line, I don't know off the top of my head who Alabama has coming back, but Ohio State's offensive line might get the edge there with the hopes if they reach their potential. But like, gambling on Ohio State's offensive line to reach their potential or Alabama's line to have some Alex Leatherwood freak come out and be a first round pick this year, which one are you going to take? Running back, they've got Jahmyr Gibbs. Trey Henderson, maybe Trey Henderson's better than Jahmyr Gibbs.
The transfer portal has been good to them this year, it appears. So
Alabama's better because of the portal.
That's
the thing about Nick Saban. He's always one step ahead of everything.
Yeah. Ohio State really hasn't had, I mean, they've got, you know, what was, I guess, the linebacker from Oklahoma State, and, or I guess, or is he a DB?
He's a DB. Safety.
Yeah. They got the linebacker running back from Arizona State. Yeah.
Who might get like 19 snaps this year.
Remains to be seen how much he'll play.
Yeah. So clearly the transfer portal has probably is accounts for a portion of the edge that Alabama has coming into the year. That's pretty tough to argue with.
And coaching.
And
they get the coaching edge.
And I think, did they lose anybody this year? I mean, this might be the first year in a while they haven't lost a coordinator, I feel like.
But no, I believe so. Yeah. Bill O'Brien still
lost
there.
They lost a position coach maybe, but I don't know.
Pete Golding is still there too, right there, DC.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think you're right there.
So that's in their favor. I can't argue with that. I think let's just hope that, hopefully, I think that's the matchup that, you know, if you're just a broad fan of the sport, that's the matchup you want in the finals. Here would have been an issue. I know we're getting late on time, but to me, the interesting question I think to ponder would have been if Ohio State hadn't got blatantly hosed by the referees against Clemson, totally unbiased opinion stated there.
It was a shit call, but can you like say they lost the game because of it? I mean, I would listen, but
calls,
plural.
Yeah.
but don't you think,
how many times did J.K. Dobbins drop touchdown passes in the red zone in that game?
Just once.
Oh,
twice.
Yeah. I think it was twice.
I think that would have been a much better, and I'm not saying Ohio State would have beat LSU that year because LSU was not losing to anybody, but don't you think Ohio State would have given them a better game that year?
I think that Ohio State was a better football team than Clemson that year.
I just think they matched up better with you know,
yeah.
with
the final score could have been like 63-48. Because I don't know. I think that Ohio State's offense was better than Clemson's offense that year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think
even their defense.
That's the year of the infamous tweet.
That is right. Ohio State was the best team in the country, which is
after watching the first quarter,
which was not true. I think it would have been a better game. I think that's right. I think it would have been a better game. I don't know. Again, with the benefit of hindsight, I don't know that I would have picked Ohio State to win that game, because the one thing about that year is it I think became clear in subsequent years is that teams were starting to figure out what Ohio State was doing defensively. Like even Clemson in that game, I think put them in some situations they weren't really prepared for. And then like in 2020 and 2021, teams just did whatever the hell they wanted to Ohio State's defense, good teams. So I think LSU probably would have figured that out as well and probably would have been a little bit of a fireworks show. But I think Ohio State was more equipped to put points up on LSU than Clemson was in that game. So I think it would have been pretty high scoring.
And slow them down a little bit too, I feel like. I just feel like with Chase Young and maybe with
Chase, yeah, yeah,
Cuda and some of those guys, I think they would have given them, put up a little bit better fight. But I think, like, I mean, if you look at that LSU team in hindsight and look at what guys are doing in the NFL, it's like even more impressive, I feel like, because you got, I mean, Justin Jefferson, you know, was late round pick and now probably top five receiver in the league. And,
yeah.
You know, seeing what Chase did despite sitting out a year and what Burrow's doing and just on and on and on. It's anyway.
Before we wrap up the show here, Marshall, I So I wrote a mailbag this week, and I never get the opportunity to answer any all the questions. There are like 50 of them. But there was one that I didn't answer in writing that I was a little curious to get your point of view on. And then I'd like to hear Ari's answer as well, and I'll chime in with mine as well. Rob J wrote a question, and he said, name the one recruit Ohio State has missed on in the last 5 years that still haunts you. And Rob's answer was Brian Brzee, the defensive tackle who was at Clemson, was a five-star player in the class of 2020.
Does it have to be a person that they actually could have gotten?
I think it has to be a person that you thought they were going to get or thought they had a shot at going to get. I don't think you can just say like Travis Hunter, who they like were never in on, who was number one player.
No, isn't there one just obvious answer here?
Well, I don't know if one jumped to mind immediately for Marshall or not. So I'd be curious on his thoughts, and then maybe you can give your obvious answer.
Well, you know, oddly enough, the first name that comes to mind, which is, I kind of can't believe I'm saying it because he's been such a disappointment in Cincinnati, is Jackson Carman, because, I felt like the offensive line, he would have been a big boost to the offensive line in that period that he was in college. And maybe that's just because he's a Cincinnati native. That's an odd one that comes to mind.
Well, I think that it's different of who haunted you the day that they committed somewhere else and who haunted you based on what you know now. Which one would you go with, Bill?
Based on what you know now. Yeah.
Okay, because like Jackson Carman was like torturous in the moment, but I don't think Ohio State's trajectory as a program shifts because of of losing him. There is one person that is just by far the.
I'm fascinated to hear what your answer is. Who is it?
Well, I want to hear yours first.
Mine, I was torn between two. One was J.C. Latham, because I think either J.C. Latham or Jackson Carman or like Darnell Wright, who was a five-star tackle in 2019, who hasn't been very good. But I just think like what that would have signified would have like eased a lot of the consternation there is right now about offensive tackle recruiting. Have they gotten one of those guys? But then the other one is Jordan Battle, because Ohio State, I think, has been lacking some dynamic guys on the back end of its defense, particularly at safety since Jordan Fuller finished playing. And Jordan Battle has been a pretty good safety for Alabama. And I think would have made people feel a lot better about the back end of Ohio State's defense had he stuck with that commitment.
How far are we going back on this?
5 years.
Oh,
okay. Then my answer doesn't count.
So Charles Woodson's out then.
I don't know.
No. I thought I was just going back to the beginning of the Urban Meyer era.
No. Okay. Well, who's your answer in that case then?
Deshaun Watson.
Oh,
that's like what I thought. Like, yeah. I thought like, it's no, like, no, that's he said the 5 years. And,
yeah.
Okay. Then I think Jordan Battle's probably the answer.
Yeah.
Because he was committed at one point and like turned out to be a dog.
Yeah.
I like the Latham because, in fact, I had forgotten about him, but that one does resonate with me because I have a friend who is also a big Ohio State fan and follows recruiting, and that was a name we actually talked about. Like we were really focused and hopeful of getting him, and given the need, it was a big deal. So I am hopeful. I think we do have to, at least before we sign up.
Can I get one more?
Sure.
I'm sorry. I got really excited. And I don't know if it's a recruiting miss or a recruiting violation, but Micah Parsons would have been nice.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
I mean, the guy was on the game day stage in Columbus on official visits, and I think he was leaning towards Ohio State at one point. He's going to be like the best defender in the NFL for the next decade and was Penn State's best player and played a position that Ohio State could have used some help at.
Yeah, I think he was viewed as a lean, at least, if not even a silent verbal, maybe. But,
yep.
That's a good one. I will say, especially given, we're in a week of hockey news, I think that it would – I am very hopeful what's the Finnish offensive tackle?
Olaus Alanen.
Olaus.
And is he from Connecticut? Is that –
He's from Finland.
He is from Finland, but he's playing in Connecticut. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And the tie-in with the Blue Jackets, I think, is just like, I mean, I'm sure you guys saw the article or was that your article, Bill, or was that?
Aaron Portsline wrote that.
Okay, that was Portsline. But I mean, that tie-in and all the Finnish connections with the Blue Jackets, I think that's just too good of a story. And obviously that's a big position to need. So I'm really, really hopeful for that one.
Yeah, if Jarmo Kekalainen can recruit Johnny Gaudreau, we would hope he can recruit Olaus Alanen too. I think that's a fair fair ask of Ohio State fans for sure.
If you go through the top 100 right now and just like look at like old top 100s, there's like 20 people that Ohio State was. Yeah, you forget. I'm like looking through it now and it's just like, there's a lot.
Yeah.
Because like they recruit. I mean, it's just like you could play this game and it's just.
You can just look through Alabama's roster. Alabama, yeah, just like roster,
how about like, the 19 best players that Alabama has had on his roster the last 5 years? Okay.
Some Clemson and Georgia too, but
yeah.
Well, and one thing I sorry to change the topic abruptly, but you know, one of the things I do enjoy immensely about this podcast is the grab ass, as Ari calls it.
You want to play some grab ass, Marshall?
The term I like the term grab ass, but
that's Bill's term. I stole it from him. I can't take credit for it.
But the food discussion is something I really do enjoy. And so I think as much as we could go on forever, but the one thing I did want to ask you guys, since I am a Cincinnati resident, What if you guys have a viewpoint, because this is the first thing anybody new to Cincinnati, it's the first question they have to be asked, is what is your view on Cincinnati style chili? And you know, so I big thumbs down from Ari.
I have never had it, and it's not something that looks particularly appetizing to me, but never? I also feel like no,
you never ate Skyline?
No, that's
peculiar.
My inclination is to agree with Ari and give it a big thumbs down, but I feel like I shouldn't do that if I've never actually had it.
Well, there's a weird I'm a chili person.
Yes, I love chili. Yeah, I make chili all the time.
It comes on a hot dog and it's spaghetti. It's not like it's disgusting.
Well,
I just don't know that I like the cinnamon aspect to it. I love the idea, and like my father loves Skyline. So like, I mean, I'm not trying to be like, because people could accuse me of being contrarian. I just don't know that ingredient meshes well for me in that. And that's a personal preference. So like, if you love it, you know, I'm not trying to say it sucks. Yeah. It's just not my cup of tea.
Is your father
do you Ohio? Like it?
Is that, do I recall correctly?
My father's from Columbus, Ohio. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I guess and part of the thing I tell people, the one thing I say about it, it's a little unfortunate, I think, that the term chili is part of it, because I think if you just remove that from the conversation and just say it's a meat sauce served over spaghetti with cheese, then I think, you know, I think.
But does cinnamon belong in meat sauce?
I mean, it's different, you know, it's of Greek origin. A lot of people probably don't even know, but
but I've never had the competitor. What's the competitor?
Gold Star.
I've never eaten that.
Gold Star is at least my take on, I can't remember the last time I had actual Gold Star, like a three-way, but my recollection is that it's a meatier but less flavorful version.
Yeah.
So they put cinnamon in Skyline chili?
Yeah.
There's a cinnamon. You should go. You should at least try it.
When I make my chili, I put a ton of cinnamon in it.
You might really like it.
Yeah.
And the hot dogs are good. Like I went to Skyline once and I ordered the hot dogs without chili, and the woman working there was like, "What the hell's wrong with
you?" You just ordered two hot dogs.
Yeah, I just wanted the hot dogs, and I put a little mustard on there, and I was good to go. Now, one thing, I'm happy you brought that up, Marshall, because I wanted to like throw an olive branch to my dad. Because we got asked a question on the podcast about Columbus local restaurants that we would suggest. And my brain went totally onto like all the cliche places that everybody talks about whenever they visit Columbus. And I didn't give them the like real spots that you should go to that aren't on the tourist trap pages. Hoon and Lion on Bethel Road is the best Chinese food on the face of the fucking planet. And I've never said that on this podcast.
Wow.
And like, if you're a Chinese food, and I use the F-bomb for inflection because it's really important to me. And it's like, I feel like I let my dad down and I let my audience down by not telling people that. And I've been trying to get Bill to go there for a decade and the man hasn't gone there. And
that's not true. I did go there. I just didn't eat there.
Yeah, he went there and I guess there was a long wait because it's delicious and he didn't. It is by far the best quality, most delicious Chinese food I've ever had. And I will be the first person to say that Chinese food can kind of run together a little bit.
Yeah.
Like this is up upper echelon stuff.
Is it like a sit down?
It is.
It's very nice in there, actually.
Yeah, it's like they really did up the. But if you're ever up again in Columbus, Marshall, try it out. And then there's also an Italian restaurant on Sawmill Road called Moretti's, if it's still there. That is a very, very, very good Italian dinner if you want a piece of veal or chicken parm. And it's just like a hole in the wall strip center type place. It's delicious. And, you know, if you're an Ohio State fan and you're in Columbus and you don't feel like having Tommy's Pizza for the 9,000th time, go check these places out. They're 15 minutes away from campus. They won't be as busy as it is on campus. And, you know, there's a lot of really good food that just kind of off onto the city of Columbus that we always forget about because we're always trying to like talk about campus area cuisine.
Well, and short north, I mean, I follow the happenings in Columbus very closely. I go to more Blue Jackets games than I do Ohio State football games, actually. But
big puck guy.
Just because I prefer to watch them on I just prefer Ohio State on television. But
you know, that's a normal thought. I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot easier to consume a football game on television.
And I mean, like I said, I went to every UC home game plus couple on the road. I went to every Bengals home game last year and one on the road. So it's not that.
Man, that's dedication. I don't even know how you would logistically do that. It's like the Big Ten and the LA teams.
Yeah. So it's not that I don't enjoy going to football games. It's just something about with where ticket prices have gone and you know, like UC, I just happen to have like access to the best seats in the house. And obviously it's-
I also hear too, that the fan experience or the fan game day atmosphere at Ohio Stadium sucks from fans. We're up in the press box. We don't really feel it, but like apparently like the in-game entertainment, the DJ, all that stuff, like they've kind of value City Arena at Ohio Stadium a little bit.
Yeah, maybe that's part of it. I think the last game I went to was like 2012. I think we were up in C-Deck and we had a pretty decent view, not too high up. I had a couple like prior to that where I had tickets to a really good game, like Penn State, where they were both top five and we were literally behind a pole. And so that does those.
Oh, yeah.
That tends to, you know, but anyway, so, well, thank you guys. This has been a lot of fun. I'm glad we could.
Thanks for taking the time. It means a lot to us. Not only listen, but that it matters to you to be on here. It means the world to us.
Yeah. My one friend that I mentioned was extremely excited when I told him about this. So
who's your friend? Let's give him a shout out.
Rob Reigns,
is he related to Roman Reigns?
Wrestler knowledge.
I don't know anything about wrestling, but
is that a wrestler?
Apparently, yeah. I know
former Georgia Tech football player too. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hails from Upper Arlington. Married a Cincinnati girl, so had to settle in the same zip code where she was from, and.
Well, tell him to get into the bracket challenge next year. Maybe he'll win.
Yeah, that's right. Definitely.
He'll definitely beat me. I can guarantee him that much. Yeah. Well, cool. Yeah. Shout out to Rob. Thank you, Marshall, so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Congratulations on winning the bracket pool and for this being your prize. I'm sure it was the highlight of your year to come on this podcast with us. Because why on earth wouldn't it be? So thanks.
And congratulations to both of you on your nuptials and already.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
I want to mention that as well. So, but thanks again, and can't wait for football season.
Yeah, it's coming down the road. So next week is Big Ten Media Days, and then camp starts the week after that. So plenty to dive into. Thank you again, Marshall, and we will talk to you guys next week with another episode of 4 to 6 with AMB.
Thanks, guys.